Chronicles of the Order, a short story anthology set in the world of Geist. Life as a deacon is hard. Not only do you sacrifice family, career, and safety, but also, sometimes, so much more. This story is set in the days before the events that occur in Geist.
The First Day by P.C. Herring. I have been regretting this morning for weeks. Ever since our instructors had announced the next round of trials, I had grown apprehensive and uneasy about this day, and with good reason. I had grown sick of the anticipation and the nerves, and the uncertainty surrounding these trials. But one way or another, this evening would come, and before I fell into this bed again, I would call this the first day of the rest of my life. If only it didn't start so early. I rolled over, intent on falling back asleep before the abbot sounded the call for the morning meal. It was too early anyways. The sudden wasn't even up yet, but we would be expected to be in attendance regardless. Yvette was already gone. Much like she had many a time before, she'd absconded from my bed sometime during the night. Male and female students are not permitted to share a room, much less a bed. While the headmaster does not expressly forbid students from courting one another, it is frowned upon. The life of a deacon is given to protecting the living from the unliving. Emotional attachment is considered to interfere with that goal. This is not to say relationships and even marriages between deacons is forbidden either, but the archabbot prefers that such relationships be put on hold until novitiates such as Yvette and myself had honed our talents and discipline. Still, there is an unspoken understanding between the students and the instructors. Students will find each other whether the instructors like it or not, but so long as we maintain our priorities, it's not worth their time to police. Part of that is discretion and not being caught sneaking about the quarters in the morning as visitors scramble back to their bunks before morning call. Yvette and I had gotten pretty good at avoiding lay brothers during their patrols, but it does mean that we wake up in the morning alone in our beds when we'd much rather stay in each other's arms. But that was not the way of things. At least not yet. So be it. Yvette was already at morning meal by the time I arrived, sitting at our usual table with Kester and Habron. I took my meal and joined them. Yvette made no great effort to greet me, but I wasn't expecting anything either. Discretion and all. Good morning, everyone.
Morning, Joram.
Her voice had fallen far more sullen than I remembered from last night and prior. I didn't have to ask why. She was troubled by the same thing on my mind. Habron turned from his meal to greet me.
Good morning, Joram. Big day for you two, no?
Yvette's spoon rattled loudly on the edge of the bowl as she dropped it, frustration tightening her face. Oh, that beautiful face. How I loved it.
What? Would you rather we not talk at all this morning?
I didn't have to be sleeping with her to know that was the wrong response. Today was not the day to put Yvette on the defensive, and Habron realized it all too late.
I'm sorry. Really, I am. Look, I know you're stressed about this, but talking about it is not going
Save
to...
Save it.
Yvette gathered her things and stood.
I'm done here anyways.
With that, she returned her dishes and stormed out. I dared not go after her. It would draw more attention than we'd attracted already, and she would be in no place to hear anything I have to say. Instead, I turned to Habron. Good going. It's not like she isn't worried enough as it is. He threw his hands up.
So what would you have me say? Nothing?
As opposed to upsetting her the morning of the trial? Yes. He glared at me.
I'm sorry, Joram, but I think I know her pretty well, and I'm going to voice my concerns. This is the fifth time you've both taken the trials. There isn't any more instruction for you to take until you pass them. So it's now or never for you two.
I rolled my eyes. At least Kester had the good sense to keep his mouth shut. But Habron just had to keep talking. This was far from a new revelation or a new conversation, and it certainly was not one I wanted to have today. But my opinion did not seem to count, and we were going to have it anyways. Oblivious to my distaste for this, Habron kept right on going.
And even if you are able to commit the way you want to, there's no saying that you'll be bonded together. to say nothing about actually marrying one another. Deacons do not choose their partners.
True, but they can petition the archabbot with a request to be bonded to
a request that is not guaranteed.
Again, this was not news. But even a chance of success was better than a guarantee of failure.
Even if you two are bonded together, and you do marry, what makes you think that's going to be successful?
There are several married deacons bonded together. Already, I knew that was a weak response, but he'd backed me into a corner, and that was the best answer I could give him.
Name one.
I'd anticipated this question, and lucky for me, I was ready with a response. Deacons Pettiv and Ferris.
Please. Deacon Ferris is one of the most powerful actives. She goes through partners faster than the seasons can turn. Besides, I hear they're miserable and their marriage is falling apart.
By the bones, how would you know? Quietly, I gave thanks to Kester. He'd still remained quiet, though he'd stopped eating in order to properly spectate this tired debate.
I hear many whispers, my friend.
First off, the relationship between Deacon Ferris and her husband is none of our concern. Second, I give no credit to rumors. And finally, even if you are right, Yvette and I are not Deacons Pettiv and Ferris. There is no use judging our chances of success by their example.
Yet you hold them up as an example to emulate.
I finally caught up with Yvette later that afternoon. She was still upset, and I held no blame towards her. My conversation with Habrin had not ended well either, and while I knew things would be fine after the trials, I had no interest in speaking with him any further right now.
I'm sorry about walking out on you this morning.
I smiled at her. Don't be. I'm glad you didn't hear the conversation we had after you left. We turned to start walking down the corridors, and I fell into my listening habit. She needed to talk and work it out.
I'm nervous about tonight. Not about the trials. We've been through them before, so I know what to expect.
The advantage of inconclusive results.
This is the last shot we have. If either one of us comes out inconclusive again, we'll never get another chance and may remain lay brothers for the rest of our lives.
Would that be so bad? I was pushing her patience and I knew it. Ever since being chosen, Yvette had wanted to be an active deacon. Her father had been, and as a child, she grew up hearing the tales from her mother of her father's service to the order. Personally, I didn't care one way or another. I would serve in the way I was asked to serve. The only thing I wanted in return was to be with her.
Yes, it would.
She swallowed, trying to suppress her emotion.
We have a duty to the order, one I take above all else. But I want us at each other's sides as we serve. We must come out of those trials with opposing determinations.
I know. Believe me, I know. That was the hardest thing about what we had planned. In order to achieve our goal, we would need differing results of the trials. Those results would pull us apart for a time. After determinations were made, novices who were to become actives were separated from those who would become sensitives, so that each could take classes focused on teaching the runes they were to wield. We would still live among each other in the Abbey, but as coursework took on a more practical and less academic approach, our time out of formal instruction would be swallowed up with study and practice. We would lose each other in the immediate future, but would have the hope of being bonded together for life. She turned to me and put her hand on my cheek.
I hadn't expected you. Hadn't anticipated it. At first I saw you as a distraction, but now I see that we give each other strength and that it is right for us to be together. I love you.
I wanted to take her hand, wanted to embrace her and to kiss her. I wanted to hold her and tell her it would be all right and that we would see things going the way we had planned and that she should not fear. But we had to be discreet. Already, this conversation was pushing the bounds of acceptable, and if I wanted to take anything further, we'd need to find some privacy. Today, that would be a poor choice. We both needed clear heads for the trials tonight, and it would do neither of us good to have our heads swimming in lust and love while being asked to search our souls. Even so, I could not resist. We continued walking, and when I found a secluded corridor, I pulled her to the side and backed her up against the wall. She offered no resistance. Yvette, you and I both know that if the trials were simply a matter of conscious desire, we would have been determined long ago. But it's not. We are determined by what's in our souls, our very being, in order to ensure we are properly trained. This is not something we can always control. My voice trailed off. While all of our previous trials had been indeterminate, there had been leanings, albeit none strong enough to lead to a determination. I had always leaned towards the sight, but the deacons told me they sensed hesitation on my part, as though I were unwilling to commit myself. At the time, I had discounted it, but as I looked back, I realized they might be right. I couldn't commit until I knew Yvette had. But despite her bloodlines, her results wavered back and forth on their leanings. It was as if her soul could not make up its mind, and the deacons reasoned that if she could find the confidence in herself, she could find the peace she needed to accept the choice her soul had already made. Her eyes narrowed.
You're not making me feel any better.
Listen, ever since I've known you, you have always known what lies in your heart. Your father was an active deacon, and you have always been driven to that end. You have always been the first to respond, to react. You have the strength and the determination of will. The blood of an active runs in your veins. I have no doubt of the result. But you must show that same resolve, and you must embrace it. This is why they'd prefer we not be together. Your emotion is clouding your confidence. Put it aside for the day and gather yourself for what's to come tonight.
Silence hung between us for several moments before Yvette took in a calming breath and nodded in agreement. As she seemed to calm, I felt my own apprehension grow. I had never questioned that Yvette would find her place among the actives. But if that was to be the case, I would need to find my place among those with the sight. If my instinct about Yvette was correct, then in truth, the success of our goals rested not on our shoulders together, but on mine alone. I felt myself waver as the very things I'd cautioned Yvette against nested within me. She must have seen the uncertainty in my face and seen that it was directed within and not at her, for as I took a step back, she took a step forward and took my wrists in her hands.
It is as you say, Joram, and I will do what I must. Meditate and find my center. But you must do the same. You have always shown evidence of the sight, and that is what I know you will continue to do. So you must not let your concern for me show or cloud your own confidence. When I am a full deacon, I will need a strong sensitive at my side, one I know and trust with my life, one with whom I can effectively work. There is none I know of other than you who can fill this role. I'm counting on you, my love.
We stood there in silence for another moment, her fingers intertwined with mine. No bond existed between us, but it was as though we could read each other's thoughts. No words need be exchanged. We pulled each other close and met in a loving embrace, and for the first time, I didn't care who saw us. Yvette met me outside the chambers before our trials. There were multiple proctors administering them, as there were far too many students for just one. We'd arranged for concurrent sessions so that neither of us would have to wait for the other. You ready? She nodded silently.
You?
I am. This is the first day of the rest of our lives, Yvette. When we come out, we'll have been determined and we'll be on our way. Any response she might have given was cut short when Habern approached. Neither Yvette nor I were terribly happy to see him, but the trials were upon us, and I was in no mood to anger myself once again.
I know you two have a lot on your mind, but I wanted to wish you both well and to apologize for this morning. I sent the wrong things, and I upset you. It wasn't my intent. I should have been more tactful in what I was trying to communicate.
It took me a moment to process his words. I knew things would calm down, but hadn't expected him to come around this quickly. Usually our spats took several days to settle. Even so, if I was to do what I needed tonight, I couldn't have this on my mind. I extended my hand. Apology accepted. Habern took my hand and we shook on it, our friendship intact and all hurt feelings forgotten. Yvette, on the other hand, just stood there and looked at him. There was nothing I could say or do. She needed to decide this for herself. Another tense moment passed before her mouth curled upward in a wry smile. Seeing this, Hebron stepped forward and offered his hand. She took it and pulled him to her, enveloping him in an embrace.
Of course. I was out of sorts this morning, and I apologize to you for not handling it better.
Ordinarily, I might have been jealous at their comfort with each other, but they'd been like this since kids, and their bond as siblings transcended all else at the moment.
Well, you both have preparations to make, and I don't want to keep you. I'll be in the comments when you two are finished. Come find me and we'll celebrate your successes together. I'll even get Kester up out of bed so we can make it a full affair.
Yvette waved at him as he turned and walked away.
I look forward to it.
The rest of the time passed in silence between us. The preparations Hebron had alluded to were mostly meditations we'd been asked to perform to clear our minds of the trivialities of life and bring us closer in touch with our centers. We had been encouraged to perform these preparations alone, but Yvette's presence calmed me as mine did for her. I sat there in silence, my eyes closed and head bowed down, but her presence was known to me as though she were radiating energy for me to absorb and make into mine own. It was a wondrous feeling, one that I had grown used to but never tired of, one I looked forward to and one I never wanted to lose.
Noviat Joram.
The call of my name brought me back to the surface, and I opened up my eyes with a deep, waking breath. Looking over to where Yvette had been sitting, she was gone. She must have been called in for her trial while I had lost myself in meditation. I hadn't even noticed her say goodbye or wish me luck if she had in the first place. No matter. I rose to my feet and approached the deacon who had called my name. She was a short and stout woman, considerably older than most others. I didn't recognize her, which was no surprise, as there were several instructors I'd never seen before, as they focused primarily on the specialized instruction.
This way, please.
She led me to a small chamber, windowless and lit only by a pair of candles on the floor. Four other deacons sat around us in the only chairs provided. Having taken these trials before, I'd anticipated this and used this to bolster my resolve. She motioned for me to sit, which I did. After closing the door, she lowered herself to the floor opposite me, putting the candles between us.
Noviat Joram, this is your trial. From this point forward, you are not to speak unless spoken to directly by either myself or any of the other deacons in attendance. We will be asking you a series of questions and requesting that you perform certain tasks for our evaluation. These are designed in such a way so as to gain as best of an insight into your soul as possible. Please do know that you will not be judged based on accuracy of your response, but rather the way in which you respond. Do you understand?
I had been through this and had heard this several times before. There was nothing new she could add. I do, Reverend Deacon.
Very well. Do you have any questions you wish to ask of us before we begin?
No, Reverend Deacon.
Very well, then. We shall begin straight away. Please recite both the Litany of Domination and the Litany of the Sight. You may choose which to recite first.
I took in another deep breath as I calmed myself. So it began. It was the fifth and final time I took the trials. In all of our previous four attempts, I had never left the chamber as tired and drained as I had this time. Perhaps that was the point in the first place. They'd wanted insight. They'd wanted to see my heart and soul, and I gave them everything I had. After all, this was my last chance, and either I'd be determined or I'd become a lay brother. Yvette and I had our goals, and I would do everything I could to make them happen. Either it would pay off, or I would be crushed. I took the offered water from the attendant and felt my parched throat start to loosen and the sweat begin to evaporate from my forehead. After returning the empty glass to the attendant and giving him a slight bow of gratitude, my hand fell to my hip and my fingers slid across the strope hanging from my belt. It had paid off. The deacons had noted that my indicators were strong, far stronger than they had been at any previous trial, and there was no doubt that I had the sight. They'd bestowed upon me a strobe intended for training and promised that with the proper instruction, I would learn to develop and use the sight, extending a new sense of the undead to aid my future partner in battle against the Geists. I couldn't have been happier. Yvette waited in the foyer outside the trial chambers. It had become far more crowded in here now that the night wore on and more students came for their assigned times. I could not see her face, but caught sight of her golden curls glistening in the light of the room. Around me, the world seemed to slow down as my senses heightened. I had done it, and now I could share the news with the woman I loved. As I approached, I saw her eyes dart to my belt. She'd seen the strobe too, and her eyes flooded with tears as her mouth seemed to curl upward. But just as soon as it did, it fell flat, and she broke eye contact with me. She had this habit of trying to look everywhere and anywhere else when she was emotional. The crowd parted, and as a clear line presented itself, I broke into a dash and rushed her, sweeping her into my arms. I whispered into her ear, "I did it! I've been determined to have the sight. I'm going to be a sensitive deacon."
"I'm so happy for you."
Her voice wavered through the tears. It was then that it hit me. Yvette's tears were not of joy or relief. No, these were sobs, labored and filled with anguish. I pulled away so I could look at her, but her head fell, dipped down, and she would not meet my eyes. "What's wrong?" I tried to lower myself so I could look up and see her, but she turned away, too upset to face me.
My trial was inconclusive again.
My breath escaped me, and I had to remind myself to remain standing. This was such a blow to her that I could show no weakness. She needed my support, and I would have to provide it and deal with my own feelings later. "Well, it's not the worst thing. You'll be a lay brother, and I'll be a sensitive. Yes, I'll be gone, but the Geists have never attacked a sensitive directly, and when I come home, we can be together." A new wave of emotion rolled out of her, and I knew I'd said something wrong. But she didn't say anything. Instead, she merely reached behind her, and after a moment pulled her arm back to her front. There, hanging off her hand, was another strobe. Hers.
"Talk to me. What happened?"
To this day, I still don't know how I found enough breath to speak. Yvette took another ragged breath as she tried to calm herself enough to explain.
"The trial was inconclusive, but the deacons said I'd shown indications of the sight this time. They said that since I'd indicated that way 3 out of the 5 trials, that they felt my soul would find the sight. I told them they couldn't make that determination based on history, that I'd wanted to be inactive. But Joram, they knew. They knew. By the bones, they knew."
Her composure fell apart again, and it took all of my effort to keep a hold of my own emotions. She wasn't making any sense to me. What did they know?
"They knew about us."
My mind raced. We'd been so careful to be discreet. We hadn't been seen. Neither of us had been caught sneaking back to our rooms late in the night. We might have been seen this afternoon, but that was easily explained. They couldn't have known about our intentions.
"They said they believed that my stated intent to become an active was merely a ruse, so as to take you as my partner and bondmate. They accused me of putting my own desires ahead of the orders. They said they wanted to make an example of us, and said that because I leaned to the sight more than I'd shown evidence of the active, I would learn the ways of the sensitive, and that misery and the knowledge that we could never be together would be our punishment for our arrogance."
She collapsed at that and fell into my arms. There was no point in discretion anymore. Somehow they'd found out about us. How or why did not matter. I knew Yvette, and I knew what they knew, that she would have been a superior active. But by their own words, they wanted to make an example of us. There would be no chance we'd be bonded now. Occasionally, 2 actives would bond, but only in extreme circumstances and only for as long as it took for either the threat to be eliminated or a proper sensitive to be found. But as master of the sight and with no powers of domination, 2 sensitives would never, under any circumstances, be bonded. They were too valuable as the eyes of the active. Even after we became deacons, we might have been allowed to be together at the abbey between our assignments. But if the abbot was making an example of us, he would ensure that after we took our first bond, we would never see each other again. We would have another few years, but they'd be marred by the knowledge that our love was doomed to oblivion. I stood there, numb to the shock and realization of it all, holding a sobbing Yvette in my arms for what might be the last time. This was supposed to have been the first day of the rest of our lives, but in its place, we were living what would be the last day of what we were leaving behind.
Narrator, Joram, PC Herring. Yvette, Vivid Muse. Habran, Chris Lester. Trial Proctor, Christiana Ellis.
Thanks for listening. Chronicles of the Order is copyright 2010, and all rights are reserved by the authors. If you want to find out more about Chronicles of the Order, or the mass market paperback release of Geist from Ace Books, then please go to booksoftheorder.com.